local voice of our hemisphere here on WMBR Cambridge. I'm Mary Masterman, and I'm actually alone in the studio today, but I have a wonderful, interesting guest coming up for you. He's actually a member of an MIT organization called House of Volunteers, and he's going to be coming in and talking to us about the work he's been doing specifically in Bangladesh. So that's going to be exciting, and I have a lot of Asian music, like thematic Asian music for you. So yeah, stay tuned. I'd like to remind you first that the views and opinions expressed on this show don't necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. And you're welcome to get in touch with us at any time during the show at 617-253-8810. Or you can email us in English, Spanish, Portuguese, French, Korean, or Vietnamese at sferio@wmbr.org. And you can catch this, well, hopefully in the future you'll be able to catch this. We're having some technical difficulties with the website, but you can catch this and all of our previous shows on the web at web.mit.edu/hemisphere. So stay tuned.
Sare jagde more sukh kiran. कैसे भुला सकती हूँ मैं तेरी हर बात को, सीने में छुपा रखा है तेरी हर याद को। हाँ याद है, मुझे सब याद है।
हाँ मैनू भी याद है।
Hey, you're listening to Sferio on WMBR Cambridge, and the song you just heard was called Faili War, and it was by Bali Jagpal, and it was on the album Asian Groove, a Putumayo album. I really liked it. It was really, really pretty. But so now I have some announcements for you, because we're still waiting for the guy I'm going to interview today, so that'll be exciting. But so yeah, right now we have some announcements. So the first one, so tomorrow, October 24th, from 3 to 5:30 p.m., the Boston Underwater Festival is going to take place, and it's part of the 350 International Day of Climate Action, and it's one of 4,000 similar events that are going to be happening around the world in almost every country. The event will take place at Christopher Columbus Park on the Aquarium Tea Stop. And on Wednesday, October 28th, there's going to be two events related to immigration. The first one is going to be called the ABCs of Immigration, and it is a training that consists of the overview of the basic concepts of U.S. immigration law and policy that gives participants an understanding of different immigration statuses and of the way people come to the United States. Another, the Health and Benefits State and Federal Eligibility Training, focuses on immigrants' eligibility for state and federal programs based on their immigration status. The workshop covers the new changes to immigrants' eligibility for state health care based on a new state health plan. Both of these are going to take place at the Boston Foundation, 75 Arlington Street in Boston, on Wednesday, October 28th, from 1 to 4 p.m. On Sunday, October 25th at 4:30 p.m., there will be a lecture entitled Another Economy is Possible, Introduction to the Solidarity Economy with Professor Julie Matai at MIT. I'm just going to read the summary about the lecture because it looks really interesting. So the summary is, dominant economic institutions based on narrow materialistic self-interest, profit motivation, and consumerism are in crisis. We are surrounded with a rich diversity of economic practices and institutions that are rooted in values of sharing, cooperation, sustainability, equality, and justice. This solidarity economy is growing on every continent, often in response to the crises created by the dominant system. This workshop will introduce the solidarity economy framework and discuss some of the wide variety of old and new practices and institutions that are springing up, including time banks. Then there will be a brainstorming session about ways in which we can reclaim our economic power and support ourselves, our families, and our communities by creatively participating in this exciting movement. This is going to be on Sunday at 4:30 p.m., and it's going to be at Havarat Shalom, 113 College Avenue in Somerville. It's by the Davis Square Tea Stop on the Red Line. And on Wednesday, next Wednesday, October 28th, there's going to be a documentary showing at MIT with a discussion. The documentary is called A Walk to Beautiful, and it tells the stories of five Ethiopian women who suffered from devastating childbirth injuries and were subsequently rejected by their husbands and ostracized by their communities. They made the choice to take the long and arduous journey to the Addis Ababa Fistula Hospital in search of a cure and a new life. And that's going to be next Wednesday at 6 p.m. at MIT in the classroom 6120. And if you don't know where 6120 is, you can just go on a Google search and search for like MIT classrooms and you can find it. And there's going to be a free light dinner and a Q&A with a representative from the movie. Next Thursday, October 29th, there's going to be a talk called Obama and the Arab-Israeli Conflict, an Interim Report Card. And it's going to be with speakers Dr. Khalili Shikaki and Dr. Shai Feldman. It's going to be at noon at MIT in classroom E46-496. And it's open to the public. And it's going to be, again, from noon to 1:30 p.m. So that's all the events I have to announce, so maybe you can come to some of those. I'm going to play another song while we're still waiting for our interviewee. So Stay tuned. Welcome back to Sferio on WMBR Cambridge. So the song you just heard was called, it was called Sabbiata by Karmix, and it's on the same CD, which is called In Asian Groove. So I'm here with Keitan, And did I pronounce your name right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, because I'm really bad at names. So, and he's amazing. So he's from an organization called House of Volunteers. And he started up this crazy new project involving education, specifically in Bangladesh. So can you introduce yourself just briefly and tell us a little bit, like an introduction about what you do at MIT?
Well, first of all, Mary, thank you very much for inviting me over here. I think it's really nice to be able to share what we're doing with the broader community out there listening to this program. Hello, everyone. I'm Ketan. I am a junior here at MIT, just like Mary, and I'm in Course 16, though, which is AeroAstro. And the work that I've been doing that Mary mentioned is related to education and improving the standard of education in particular in Bangladesh, which we hope would then extend to other countries as well. And so far, we have done it in sort of a twofold way. The whole thing started with the help of Public Service Center here at MIT. And then we sort of opened this student group called House of Volunteers. And currently we are conducting all of our activities through HOV.
So how did you get the idea to start all of this?
Well, it's really funny. I mean, now that I think about it, it's like so much has happened. It's really difficult for me to remember the single point when it all started. But I think in the summer of 2007, I was talking to my roommate, and my roommate is also from Bangladesh. He is now a senior. And we were talking about how problematic the education system in Bangladesh is and the immense scope that there is to improve the standard without having to invest a lot. And we were having this broad discussion about how feasible it would be to do something really good at a wide scale, because as you'd know that for most of the third world countries, cost is an issue, right? So we were talking about how we could do it. And then I suddenly had this idea that maybe we could provide some sort of video supplement that is easy to record and then easy to distribute and easy to store these days, given the current state of technology of recording devices and storage devices. And then sort of it was dormant. The idea was dormant for a while because we didn't really think much about it. But then in the following IAP, I saw this email from PSC Public Service Center, and I thought that, hey, why not apply and see what it's about? So that is like how it all started. And of course, as I moved on, I got inspiration from a lot of people, various ideas from a lot of people, and it sort of evolved on its own from then.
Oh, and for our listeners who don't know, IAP is like the January term that MIT students have. So we have like a month off in the winter when people can go and actually travel to other countries and do projects. And the Public Service Center is the part of MIT that actually funds students to go abroad to other countries. You might have heard us talking about that in the past. So what makes you think that the idea of like integrated like video lectures, like what makes that seem like it would be really like a big advantage for students?
Well, I think the first idea is from, since I'm a student myself, I was looking at how we learn. I mean, after coming at MIT, it's like, as we commonly say, that MIT gives you the experience of drinking from a fire hose. And, you know, we pretty much do everything. I'm pretty sure you're very familiar with it. So we are all you know, very familiar with the idea of trying to maximize the efficiency of our time. And oftentimes I have found since my freshman year that when I look up something in the internet, like Google something, or sometimes even watch a video of something, it greatly helps me remember what's going on or what the mechanism of the subject matter is. So that sort of gave me the idea. And also, if you remember the 1803 course that we have, differential equations, in that course we did a lot of simulations on vibrations and waves, where we had to sort of play with the inputs, the parameters, and it gave us a sense of how the input is affecting the output. In other words, a very good sense about how the physical inputs are affecting the whole physics of the problems. So then I sort of, that idea gave me the hint that, you know, probably we could record similar things, show them, instead of just writing down equations on the chalk, show the students what is actually happening, what is the actual physics of the matter. You know, if you're talking about momentum, how would you visualize momentum when you're giving the lecture? I'm sure that many teachers in many parts of the world who have some sort of experience of, if not teaching, then at least trying to explain something to people, have felt that, gosh, if I could just, you know, show it to him, if I could just give him the vision of what I'm thinking, then it would be so much nicer. So sometimes words are nice, but like we say, that pictures are much more stronger as a tool of showing what you're trying to say. So videos are also very effective. So that's sort of the basic idea why I think videos are very effective to explain concepts in a very conceptual way.
And so you're from Bangladesh, right? So what is your personal experience with education in Bangladesh, like with your background?
Right. So I actually come from a very varied background in Bangladesh. We currently have sort of a twofold education, well, more like a threefold education system in Bangladesh. We have the national curricula, education curricula, which is the bulk of, which accounts for the majority of the education system in Bangladesh. Almost about 80% of the students follow that track. But besides that, we also have students who follow what we call the English medium education, which is basically the British education curriculum of GCE, General Certificate of Examination. And I basically followed that system from the sixth grade. But prior to that, I was in the traditional system, which is the national, you know, following the national system. So I sort of have an experience of the advantages, disadvantages, and shortcomings of both sides. Then there is the third fold or the third system, which is the religious schooling type. That I don't really have much of an idea about, but they pretty much suffer from, all of them pretty much suffer from the same problem of, inadequate resources, because the books, the science books, the way they're designed is that you should ideally have a lab, a very good lab, to take the students there and then show them what you're talking about, so that it gives the students a very good impression about what's going on, something about intuitive learning that we always talk about. But since that is not, you know, available in all the schools, and that is a practical situation, because to set up a good lab, you need resources, you need funding, which unfortunately a lot of schools in countries like Bangladesh do not have. So, that's how I sort of felt the need to do something that is cost-effective that can also be implemented probably in most of the schools.
And so after you decided you wanted to start this project, how did you find people to help, and how did you formulate what you were going to do, I guess?
So this is really amazing. I mean, this is something that even I did not expect, the way things turned out. Like I keep telling people when I talk about iSchool, is that it's really like an entrepreneurship experience for me. It's definitely not a business, but it is very similar to the way people plan business. You know, you plan the first few phases, I guess. That's how I started the whole idea about iSchool. I just had an idea. I went on to Bangladesh with the PSC grant that I got, Public Service Center grant, that I got in IEP 2008. But really, I did not have a whole plan laid out, because I didn't know what kind of response to expect in Bangladesh. And I think it's time for me to say a few words about my background right before I came to MIT. I was actually enrolled in one of the business schools, which is very interesting, because I'm studying Aero-Astro here, but back in Bangladesh, I was studying in a business school for 6 months. And that is the time when I made a lot of friends in Bangladesh, and that institute, IBA, Institute of Business Administration of Dhaka University. So I had a lot of friends. It's one of the premier business schools in Bangladesh, and I had a lot of friends back there. So my initial idea was that once I go back to Bangladesh, I will be able to reconnect with them and sort of ask them to help me in a small scale. You know, probably it would be a good experience for me as well as for them. And once I went back, the response that I got from IBA, both from the students and from the authority, was overwhelming. I mean, the authority was very helpful, and they also assisted me by giving me the permission to conduct one or two seminars there, where I sort of, more like info sessions, where I invited students to talk about MIT Public Service Center in general and about iSchool. Because you have to understand that the colleges and universities in Bangladesh, and I believe in many other third world countries, do not have a practice of conducting public service. This is interesting because it's just a matter of practice. You know, we do it in colleges here in U.S. We most of the colleges have some sort of platform for students to come forward and help the society. But in Bangladesh, it's not always the case. So, that's the way I got response from IBA. And then the word sort of spread around from IBA. Obviously, the MIT factor, being from MIT and getting help assistance from MIT, was a significant strength for the project because there is always the credibility factor. You know, what you're doing is something that needs to be perceived positively by people. And since you're from MIT, a premier institution that pretty much everybody knows about, it helped me a lot. And it sort of grew on its own, like I keep saying, that I came in contact with a lot of people with a lot of good ideas that I did not even expect myself initially. So yeah, I mean, that's how it sort of evolved.
Wow. So now that you're back at MIT, what steps are you taking to pursue your project? Have you been involved in making the videos, or what are you doing? What are you working on this semester?
Right. So far I've been in Bangladesh twice. I've just spent my last summer this summer in Bangladesh, the entire 3 months, and the major steps that we have taken so far is that we have compiled the PowerPoint slides of the chapters. So I think I'll stop here a little and explain the mechanism in which we are actually doing the video, because the way we're making the video is not exactly just going to a classroom and just recording something, because that would be a repetition of what happens already. You know, in the classrooms, you have a teacher who are often good, often perhaps, you know, not as adequate as you would want, but it's the same thing. So we wanted to do something different, something that's easy to repeat, a process that is easy to replicate, and also something that is effective for the students and for the volunteers to do, carry out. So what we proposed is that we will do a sort of layered, we will follow a layered approach. By that I mean, initially we'll create a simplistic version of the videos that we're talking about, and then as we move along we will add additional layers to it to make it more sophisticated and more complete. So for now, this summer, what we did is we used simple tools like Flash and PowerPoint to create our video slides. So these are not really videos yet. So we just have slides where we are explaining the concepts. So like I was saying, that if you are trying to cover the chapter on density, which we know is mass divided by volume, then what we're doing is that we are giving the students an opportunity to conceptually grab what density really means. We're showing them a mass that's going on top of an electronic balance. And this is all very rudimentary animation, but I believe it's still very effective. So you have an electronic balance, you show a ball going on top of it, and then that thing, that mass that the electronic balance is reading, is sort of going on the numerator of the formula. And then for the volume, I'm just basically carrying out what we do to measure volume, you know, either dipping it inside a cylinder full of water, showing the difference of water level, and then putting it on the denominator, or just, you know, calculating the radius or diameter. So basically, that is the general approach that we're doing. There is, we're making PowerPoint slides to show them the step-by-step process of what these concepts are, sometimes with some brief calculations. And then there is the next phase where we have volunteers who are voicing over those slides. So as they're sort of clicking away the slides, the way we would present something in a classroom, they're explaining what the slides are all about. And we are trying to, we have made the best effort we could to minimize the level of text, so that it's not something that you have to continuously read from the screen. We have tried to make it more attractive, because I believe that learning experience at the level that we are trying to achieve, which is typically for grade 9 to 10 students, we believe that it should be something not intimidating, because a lot of students are actually intimidated by physics, because they believe that it's a lot of equations, a lot of memorizations, which is actually not the case. If you actually understand what's going on, then you can relate a lot of things and it's easier for you to remember. So we have tried to make it more attractive, a little flashy here and there, but it's mostly picture intensive, animation intensive. And those animations, those slides are eventually getting converted into a video file when the person is clicking away. And we're using some softwares like Hypercam, which basically records whatever goes on your screen. And then we are also using some audio softwares to record the audio and then sort of gluing the two files and having those video outputs. So currently, we have the video output of all the physics chapters from the book of grade, from the ninth grade book and the 10th grade book, basically. And we would like to extend that process to biology and chemistry soon so that we have the basic science covered. And then we would sort of like to improve on those videos by doing some, adding some videos of experiments in labs. So those are like not animations, but real videos of lab experiments. So I think that's the plan for now.
That's really exciting. So after you make these videos, do you have a plan for how you're going to get schools to use them in Bangladesh, or like how you're going to disseminate them and raise awareness about them? It seems like that might be like one of the more difficult steps.
Well, I'd say spot on. I mean, it is one of the bigger challenges. In fact, you'd be surprised, but the other big challenge, while we're talking about challenges, is that the perception among teachers. Unfortunately, a lot of the teachers who teach in high schools in Bangladesh, and I would expect in similar countries, do not really welcome changes. It's a matter of perceiving these changes as something that would, that would require a lot of work on their part. It's like the same thing when we had to move on from typewriter to computers. A lot of people felt that they could not keep up. So similarly, when we're talking about technology, when we're talking about changing the classroom environment, providing a supplement, and it's a process. Like the very philosophy of iSchool is that we're not trying to substitute anything. All we're trying to do is basically provide something to make the whole process more efficient and more meaningful. So iSchool supplements are meant to be used perhaps once or twice weekly to go along with the chapters that the teachers are teaching in the classroom. But even then, the teachers do not always welcome, thinking that it might be something new and more challenging for them to implement. Then, of course, there is the question of the broader context, how the government would welcome it. We have the Ministry of Education in Bangladesh, and we have been trying to sort of work with them. But till now, we haven't really formally approached them, because I believe that once we have a sufficient set of data, by that I mean, testing our iSchool program on a sizable amount of schools and school children, and seeing what kind of impact it has on them. Because while we believe that iSchool or the idea of iSchool is going to be something effective for the students, it is really the students eventually who can give us the true picture about how much more they're learning or how effectively they're learning. So in the last IEP and in last summer, we have actually worked with three groups of students where we have categorized them in terms of their merit. And we sort of selected them on an introductory, based on an introductory exam result. And then we sort of taught them the similar topics that they were tested on using visual aids and supplements that iSchool is about, and then retook those exams. And at this point, I'd like to mention that Professor Peter Dermeshkin of MIT, who teaches a course on 801 mechanics, he basically helped me a lot in this whole process. He helped me choose the questions which would test the conceptual strength of students. He also helped me in sort of design a process to evaluate the performance of the students and see how well they're doing and how much they have learned. So we have sort of collected some data. We have taken some feedback from the students about what they thought and, what are the positive things that they thought about the program, what were the shortcomings of the program. So as we are working on it, we are not rigid, we are very flexible, and we are taking all of these factors into account. And in my mind, I believe we are taking roughly a target of about 3 to 4 years to run these programs, build up our content, and sort of see how the students are learning. And once we have all of that data along with the cost-related information as to like how much you'd need to run the program, how much you'd need to maintain the program. Once we have all of that data, I believe we'd like to approach the Ministry of Education in Bangladesh. And given the fact that they spend the largest or one of the largest area chunk of budget that goes in Bangladesh is in the education field, I believe that we should not have a lot of problem in convincing the government that this is something that is worth their attention.
That's really exciting. So I think we're going to take a break now. You're listening to Sferio on WMBR Cambridge. And I want to let our listeners know that if they have any questions or comments, they're welcome to call us at 617-253-8810. And so we'll be back with you just shortly.
Stop. This is a stupid promo. I think we both know this.
Well, it's your idea, Generoso. I mean, what's wrong?
Joan, why do you think I keep coming to you every year to make these promos? It's not like, I don't know, it's not like my show has moved in 10 years.
Well, because you asked.
Joan, when a man meets a woman, there are, well, you know, feelings.
Okay, stop. Right there. Oh, my God, Gene, that's so disgusting.
Joan, come on.
Gene, after you leave the control room, do you know it takes weeks to get the Weasley funk out of here?
Joan, you're pretty.
You're weird looking. Please, come on. Well, frankly, you smell like chocolate soup.
What, chocolate soup? What does that even mean?
Generoso. Joan? Joan, what are you doing here?
Oh, hi, Keithums. How are you?
Don't worry, Keithums. I'm out of here.
Oh.
Man, that Joan is always trying to help you with promos and stuff.
Yeah, she must really like the show.
Oh, I guess so. Let's go get some soup.
Yay!
Celebrating 10 years on WMBR. Generoso's Bovine Ska and Rocksteady. Every Tuesday at midnight on WMBR Cambridge.
and welcome back to Sferio on WMBR Cambridge. We've been listening to Ketan. He's been telling us about iSchool, which is an amazing program that he started at MIT to kind of improve the education system in Bangladesh through these sort of electronic supplements to the curriculum. So I wanted to ask you, what was the last thing I wanted to ask you before we went back into the music? You were talking to us about how you wanted to implement the program, but how much do you foresee it costing a lot in the future? And if it does, how do you think you'll be able to raise the funds to deal with the costs?
Right. So I think the first sort of motivation for me to think about iSchool was the cost factor. I mean, sure, there are a lot of ways in which you can think up a lot of ways in which to improve the education system anywhere, especially in countries like Bangladesh, where the availability of technology is really, really, scarce. In that kind of a region, you might think that having a computer for every school, or even like a computer to giving laptops or computers to the kids, would improve the education system, because then they can access the internet themselves, find out some of the information from there. But I mean, how realistic is that? It's definitely not realistic, and it's not going to happen. The beauty about iSchool is that we believe it's very cost effective, because starting from the initial stages of the design, all the costs that you need, since it is a volunteer initiative, there is absolutely no cost in sort of recording the videos, because the volunteers are basically interviewed by the older volunteers who have been working for a while. They sort of see who are qualified and who have the qualities to do the various jobs for iSchool, the technical jobs. And then we have this team of volunteers who are working in the different phases of iSchool. Some are working on the preparation of the slides that I was talking about earlier. Some are doing the task of writing the script for the people who will be talking on it and giving the voice, and some are actually giving the voice over. And then there are other people who are doing the video editing. So since this is a voluntary initiative, and we'd like to keep it that way, of course, if need be, when we'd like to finally polish it, then we might seek for professional help. But I believe that should not be a substantial cost. Then comes the element of distributing it and sort of implementing it in the schools. Most of the schools in Bangladesh now have at least one computer, one desktop. So the facilities are already present there. All we need to do is basically burn a DVD with our material and send it to them, and they can easily use it. They can pause it wherever they want. They can play it whenever they want, and they can repeat it how many times they want. So it's really not going to cost them much either. In the rare case that the schools do not have a computer access, or do not have any sort of way of showing it to the students, we have another simplistic version of iSchool, which is just the video and no animation, animations, but no interactive software and no sort of links for the internet. That basic version is also available, and we're working on it. And we will be giving it to those schools where there is no computer at all. So what they'll do is, initially, to cut cost, they can rent VCD players. And at this point, I'd like to say that VCD players and DVD players also, even, are very readily available in all parts of Bangladesh, no matter how rural area you are, however a rural area is. There is always going to be DVD players around, just because DVDs are so available these days, and so are CDs. So people watch DVDs and CDs pretty much in every corner of Bangladesh, and DVD players are sort of cheap to rent. So they can even rent it, and their yearly cost of renting a DVD player once a week, I've calculated that, and it does not exceed even, I think, $200. Because you're talking about countries like Bangladesh, where the standard of living is low, which means that the average cost of living is also low. So while you might think, sitting here, that the cost of running a program might be huge, because you need to pay professionals and you need to pay other people who will charge you a lot, in reality, the thing is reverse. In Bangladesh, we don't, given the income of an average person in Bangladesh, the costs are high. But given the fact that we're doing a lot of fundraising here in U.S. from non-resident Bangladeshis and also getting fund from other sources, corporate sources, like we already got some fund from Chevron, who helped us sponsor this scholarship for some of these school children who will be using those scholarships to pay for their SSC registration fee, which is the secondary school certificate exam they give at the end of their 10th grade, sort of like your SAT exam here. It's a nationwide exam. So, really, I believe that in the long run, the cost should not be a big factor. In fact, cost minimization is one of the pillars of iSchool. And then, once we have the test period over, then we'd like to get the government involved. And given the fact, as I was telling earlier, that the government spends a sizable portion of their budget on improving the standard of education, I believe that the great fund that is available or that is already being channeled to spread education can also be used to improve the quality of existing education. So those are two different things, obviously. While you can increase the number of schools by extending education to people, which is obviously good, you should also try to improve the existing quality of education, which I believe we will hopefully get some support from the government later on. So I believe that, it'll work just fine.
Nice. If people that are listening to our program are interested in learning more about iSchool or getting involved themselves, how should they go about doing that?
Oh, it's very simple, really. They can just email us at hov-exec@mit.edu. I'll say that again, HOV, that is House of Volunteers, dash exec, E-X-E-C, at mit.edu. They can also just go to the HOV website, House of Volunteers website, which is at web.mit.edu/HOV, or just search for House of Volunteers in web.mit.edu. And there's a feedback form where they can click on one of the tabs. I believe there is a feedback or something related to giving us your response. There they can actually fill out a form, very small form, and sort of ask us any question, send us any comment they have, or provide us some suggestion that they might have.
Cool. And also, if you want to ask Keitan a question right now, you can call us at 617-253-8810 in the studio, and he's here right now. So these are really exciting, these lectures you're making. One more question I had about the videos. So it sounds like it's a lot of work to develop these like supplementary course materials, especially since you're like a student here and you have a lot of like your AeroAstro, right? Which for our listeners, AeroAstro is like the hardest major at MIT. It's like really, really hard. So have you been getting a lot of outside help with developing the curriculum materials? Have you gotten a lot of MIT student volunteers or outside volunteers or?
Right. So, just to give a clear perception, I think all majors at MIT are really hard. I mean, I'm pretty sure that we all pull all-nighters every now and then. So I wouldn't really say that Core 16 is just the hard one. Moving on to your question about the work, yes, it is a lot of work, definitely, because, it's not just creating the videos. You have to spend a lot of time brainstorming what kind of video you want. What is the element of the video that you want? Because in the end of the day, the material present in the video should be effective for the students. You cannot just give any random example that you want. The physics should be consistent, because while you're teaching it, it's something that they are watching, so you don't want to give them the wrong information, because then they will end up getting the wrong image and the wrong impression about the subject matter. So definitely, we do have to spend a lot of time in sort of designing the content of for iSchool. But in that, I've had a lot of help. In fact, Professor Dermeshkin, as I was telling earlier, from our physics department, who takes 801, course 801 here at MIT, he has been helping a lot. He has been helping me in designing the subject content of iSchool, and he has been basically giving me support in terms of the kind of examples, the kind of displays that we should have in the iSchool videos. Apart from that, in the actual work of creating the videos and giving the voiceover, it's really the volunteers. I mean, I myself am more engaged with the overall architecture of the program. So I have to do a lot of work related to bringing people in iSchool program and sort of, taking them into the program. And besides that, we also have to make sure that the people get their questions answered, the volunteers get their questions answered. They have to know sort of what's going on. So I have to run around, do a lot of that work. But the volunteers are then trained often by the older volunteers who do the work, who have been engaged with the program for a while. And that way we sort of make sure that the knowledge is transferred from the previous generation of volunteers to the current generation of volunteers. And that's really how we are doing the program for now. We also conduct some workshops, and we have had help from some organizations who have provided us some sort of help in the preparation of the PowerPoint slides. So far, those are the resources that we have been using.
Thanks so much, Ketan. We're actually finishing up Sparrow now, but thanks so much for telling us your story. It was great hearing about it, and I would encourage listeners to contact Ketan at the email he gave us if you're interested in getting involved.